What's up, Grizz Nation? Welcome to the show. It's David Isaac and Candace. We are here for another post-game podcast. The Memphis Grizzlies continue to impress. Doesn't matter who, like, what name is on the back of a jersey, this team comes out and finds ways to win. They beat the Sacramento Kings to improve to 4-1, 125-110. Jake LaRavia had what I hope is a welcome to the NBA. Now let's find your stride game. I know he's a rookie. There's going to be ups and downs, but 13 points, 9 rebounds, 3 for 4 from 3, 5 of 6 from the field. David Roddy is still struggling offensively, but he's finding ways to be impactful in the game. He's playing good basketball. It's just, man, I don't even know. I don't even know what to say other than, like, hell king climbing. How are you guys feeling about it?
Man, this team just continues to defy logic. I mean, that's the only way I can say it. Like, I'm pretty much speechless right now. I mean, you just look, even going back to last year, you missed Ja for 25 games last year. And not only do you continue to win, they even wanted a higher clip during the time that he was out. And that's something that you don't see. You don't lose a guy like Ja for that much. Usually you lose a guy like that for 25, 30 games. Your season might be done. And they just continued to win. And fast forward to this year, I said 6-4 over these first two games. And I felt like that was being a little bit generous with some of the things that they were dealing with. Like, you knew you were going to be without Jaren Jackson Jr., right? That's your defensive anchor. I mean, defense runs through him. You can look at the analytics last year, what this team was with him on the floor defensively versus what they were off when he was off the floor defensively, like night and day difference. So you're missing him already. So you go back and, okay, you think about who's going to replace him in the starting lineup. And, I mean, the logical answer is you hope Sunday Aldama can be that guy. And you don't have to go back. We just talked about going back to Utah Summer League. Sunday Aldama looked like people were questioning whether he was even an NBA player at that point. And this is just going back a couple months ago. And now you see what he's doing on a nightly basis. Like, how is that even possible? Like, I don't even understand how that guy that we saw early in Utah Summer League is starting and doing what he's doing right now at a high level, especially on both ends. Like, coming out of Summer League, I felt like, okay, he's a rotation player. Like, he will be able to get by with him starting, but I didn't see this coming, especially what he's doing on the defensive end and rebounding. Like, I didn't see that at all. And then you're also miss Dylan Brooks for a few games. You don't have Zaire Williams. And you have guys in new roles. You have John Contrell, who's a guy we've seen put up numbers in the past, but he's never been a guy who's had to be in the rotation and you have expectation for him. He stepped in seamlessly like he's been in the rotation all the time. I mean, knocking out threes, just doing everything. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Then you got guys like LaRavia, who outside of one game in the summer league and in the preseason, I mean, didn't really do a lot. And now he's fitting in, man, looking like he's been playing in the NBA for a couple of years, man. It's just amazing. Like, this doesn't supposed to happen. Like I've had people like criticize me kind of for my thoughts coming into the season for having some questions. And I don't think my assessment of coming into the season that they could struggle with all these things that they're going to be dealing with here early season, I don't think that's illogical. I think what they're doing is illogical. This is kind of magical stuff. Like, this is not something that you're going to see happen all the time. I mean, this has come together much quicker than I thought, man. And like David said, hell king climbing. Shout out to Taylor Jenkins and this the player development staff and what they've done with these players, because I've come to the realization now, and I really do feel like this. It feels like you could get any group of NBA players together. And if you put them with this coaching staff and they're in Grizzlies uniform, they're going to find a way to win ball games. And that's what I really do feel like that. Like, I don't even know what to say, man. Like, I don't have any questions. Like, whatever, this team has no ceiling because it's just next man up. And that's a real thing with this team. No matter what happens, they're able to weather the storm, man. It's just been crazy to see and exciting to see.
Yeah, all hell came climbing, but I'm gonna take a different approach. I know everybody's talking about Laravia and the rookie and his development, and they should. But I just want to spend a little time talking about Desmond Bane because he had yet another 31-point game. I think that's his first time having back-to-back 30-plus games, if I'm not mistaken. Y'all can correct me on that, but I'm pretty sure that that's new for him in back-to-back
Yeah,
games.
I'm pretty sure because I think 38 was his career high. So I'm pretty positive he hadn't had two back-to-back 30s. I'm pretty sure.
And but for me, it's not just that he got the 31 points, it's how he got those 31 points. He has some incredible shots. Just his development in terms of, we've talked about his playmaking, but that's still very much though, well, that was still very much though there with another four assist game for him.
Hit him
But
with
he
that
is
crossover. Man.
that handle for Desmond Bane, the ability for him to take guys off the dribble, and he got a couple options. You don't know what he's going to do. I mean, he can drive down the lane. He can take you off the dribble that way. I mean, he put a poor Rashawn Holmes
Man.
in a
And
blender pretty much. And he didn't know what to do.
that was nasty, man.
And that was tough. And for him to end the half with a 3-point shot on Keegan Murray, that it was a steep step back three, basically. It's very well contested, basically. And if Bane's gonna be hitting those kind of threes, being able to take guys, it seems like he's getting a little bit more in his bag in terms of ISO game. And we used to talk all the time last season about how that wasn't a part of Desmond's game, right? He was a catch and shoot 3-pointer. He wasn't really able to create his own shot, but you're seeing him find ways to create his own shot, whether it's driving down the lane, whether, he always had that flyby thing. That was always his way, but it seems like defenses have adjusted at least somewhat, and so he's countered with just more in his bag. And so to talk about the development, yes, of these rookies, I think we'll continue to see that. And I'm not taking anything away from that, but you guys just talked about it. So I just want to talk about the development within the program from guys who we've seen for a while, just how they continue to take step after step after step. When you really, in most organizations, you might see a jump, but you don't see like two, three jumps from guys, and you're consistently seeing with every player two, three jumps from guys. We're even seeing a jump in Steven Adams' game. Steven Adams hit
Yeah.
zero step last night. I was like, wait, what? Or the other night, maybe. He put out a euro step, and I was like, what? But even him, like, is developed and as veteran of a player as he is, they're encouraging him to be more aggressive offensively, and you're seeing him being able to do that. He's not gonna be able to hit those free throws. I'm just gonna give up that dream. But you're seeing other elements of his game kind of come to life. And like I said, all hell king climbing, but just on every level, on levels that don't oftentimes get recognized.
And with Bane, I don't know what was going on those first couple games, man. But he didn't just flip the switch, man. He tore it out of the wall. Like I don't know what's
He's
going on, but
strong.
he
He
is,
just got
man, just
stronger. That's
amazing
all.
right now. Hashtag All Star Bane, man. I said get it trending. I really do believe that's in his future for sure.
It's so weird. Like Steven Adams, I don't remember what announcer or what there was an analyst that was talking about him and shooting free throws, and he was, oh gosh, dang it, I can't remember. It's driving me nuts. But he was talking about like when you're at a mini basketball machine and you're trying to throw that. What was that your interview with Hasseltine that he was talking about that? Isaac, that's where my mind is going back to. But he was talking about like when we go to like when one of us go to that little like the mini basketball hoop and we're trying to make baskets, like our hand is significantly bigger than the
Bigger than the
ball.
ball,
And
yeah.
so it makes it super hard to control it whenever you're going distance. And that's where Steven Adams is, like with the size of his hands compared to the basketball. He can't get it comfortable on there. And so when he's trying to make it, it's trying to control, what for us would be like a mini basketball into the hoop from a distance. And so that makes sense. You guys, if you've listened to the show for any time at all, you know that I am a freak whenever it comes to free throws. It drives me nuts when teams are bad from the free throw line because these guys are professional. They go out here and they put work in the gym. Ja Morant is shooting 88% from the free throw line so far this year. And if he stays at that clip, not that I can love him anymore, but man, like my heart's gonna increase in size if he continues to be an 80-plus percent free throw shooter. It's I don't know. I'm not going to go off on a free throw tangent this early in the season, but it's crazy to me. You know, the growth, the points that Candace was making about how you're seeing multiple steps from each guy. It all goes back to this coaching staff. And I know that this was from the Hasseltine interview. He talked about the culture from Taylor Jenkins and this coaching staff and how they treat you like you're a part of the organization. And it's not just, the coaching staff, but like the training staff, the developmental guys, yeah, and other organizations. He has witnessed those guys get treated as they're in a lesser role, when in reality they are. You know, the ball boy is not as important as the head coach on the team, but throughout like this franchise right now, this coaching staff, everybody is, you know, they're getting the same level of respect, and that's just great to hear, man. I think that in and of itself is a huge reason why you're seeing these guys, because that has to create a level of comfort for them, right? Like, you, if you are in a situation where you know that you're not going to get crucified if you make a mistake, it makes things easier for you.
Yeah, man. As I said, owner Eric, I mean, that's definitely true. I think it trickles down with everybody, because I think these guys on this team are super comfortable with this organization, with the coaching staff, their roles. They know exactly what they're going to be asked to do. They don't get crucified, like you said, when they make mistakes. I think just from top to bottom, just the way they handle it is just first class, from Robert Pera on down, and they all seem to be on the same page. And I know you'll hear a lot of organizations probably say that's what's going on, but even just being from the outside looking in, not even being somebody to cover those other teams, you can tell that that's not the case everywhere. Like a lot of teams, like Minnesota right now, those guys don't like each other. It's very, very clear that those guys don't really, really get along. I mean, you saw Utah last year in that situation with Gobert and Donovan Mitchell. You don't really have that type of stuff here. It's just, I don't feel like people on this team, I feel like they're all on board with Taylor Jenkins. If you talk to them, and I don't think they're just saying that, I think they all love each other. I mean, you can just tell walk-off interview, man, that was awesome last night with LaRavia. I mean, you see that continuing on with the rookies. We saw that last year. For him to kind of be a part of that, I mean, that was just good to see, man. It's just a special organization, man. It's, when they say culture, Grizz culture, that's not cliche at all with this team. I mean, it is 100% real, and you can see it from top to bottom.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Just to kind of continue on that train, I just want to shout out Tyus Jones for being more aggressive offensively. With Zaire Williams out, he attempted 11.
Yeah, he's really good last night.
And his career average wasn't even 8 field goal attempts. And it's still early in the game, early in the season, so it's a small sample size. But you're just seeing each guy sort of develop a new level. Santi Aldama, I mean, that's pretty obvious story. We're going to see David Roddy come along. Brandon Clark's getting a little bit better on those screens. It's still a work in progress. It's not where I, for one, would like it to be, but I do see the intentionality. And then the final thing I just want to touch on when it comes to the development is Jake LaRavia. I go back to him. One thing that drives me crazy about him defensively is at times he can tend to just want to guard whoever has the ball. But in the second half, it must have been Taylor Jenkins, I'm sure, said something to him, but he stopped doing that in the second half. And his defense was a lot better. I guess they talked to him about his defensive positioning and where he needed to be, because I actually think one of the assistant coaches mentioned that he sort of improved with that. It was Taylor Jenkins in the third quarter. They did some like timeout interview, and Taylor Jenkins mentioned that Jake LaRavia had gotten better about being in the right spots defensively. And you saw it immediately, like an immediate impact from one half to the next.
Yeah, I've gotten story time. Monday night, whenever I was down there at the Nets game, pregame, I was sitting there watching LaRavia warm up. And so early in the pregame, like the cheerleaders are out there working on their routines and the person's out there practicing the national anthem. LaRavia comes out there and they had music playing. Well, then the cheerleaders come out to do their thing. They cut the music off and LaRavia is shooting the ball and he misses. And he's like, "Where's the music at?" And, you know, Coach Jones, Brad Jones, he just keeps passing the ball and telling him what he's wanting him to do. And he misses like, I'd say probably 3 or 4 in a row. And he keeps saying something about the music. And Brad Jones is like, you need music to make a three. And I'm like, man, it sure looks like it. And the Ray kind of turns and looks at me. And then, you know, he kept shooting and he was knocking them down. And I shot a video of him making, I think, four or five in a row as he was moving around the key, shooting the threes. But, you know, to see him like in the game, find that level of confidence. And I know, like, warming up, you have different routines for a lot of people listening to the music when you warm up. That's what helps get you into, you know, it gets you into rhythm. And I think that what they saw in LaRavia was exactly what we saw last night. The things, he's going to be super disruptive on that defensive end and being in the right spots. His hands are so fast. And I think that, you know, when we were covering him, we were talking about him for draft prospects. That's one of the things that I noticed on video with him. His hands are super quick. And so if he just stays in the right position, he's going to cause a ton of deflections. He's going to get a ton of steals. And this is, you don't need him to be anything more than what he was in this game. Do you need him to grab 9 rebounds every night? No, you don't need him to do that. But if he can go out there and be efficient from the field and be disruptive on the defensive end, he can be the bench player that you need, because you have, you know, you have Ja Morant, you've got Desmond Bane, Steven Adams, Jaren Jackson Jr. You have the guys that are the core of your team. You just need him to be a plus role player in order to get this team to the next level. And this is the first time, I think, that since he's been with the club, you can say we see that he has that possibility.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it. I think last night was kind of his coming out party. Because, I mean, you saw some flashes on a defensive end. He's been disruptive even going back to the preseason. You could see that, but it was on full display last night. And like you said, you don't need him to grab 9 rebounds, but I think it was super impressive, the 9 rebounds he did, because some of them were like really, really good rebounds. Like going up over guys, getting a rebound. I was impressed. And like you said, I don't think he's not going to do this every night this year, but what we saw last night, if he never really has to be any better than that. If he could give you what he gave you last night, I mean, that's what you want him to be. I mean, if you take a guy in the 20s, like I said, everybody's not going to be banged. But if you take a guy at that area of the draft and he turns out to be – he can do what he did last night, that's a – you got a coup. That's a really good pick right there. And yeah. I mean, this front office continues to make these picks. I mean, we got a lot of people – shout out to David, man. He didn't write them all, but a lot of people wrote off Santi Aldama as a miss. And looks like, man, that's going to be right on target again, man. This front office, just especially when it comes to draft picks, just doesn't miss, man. They have it so far. And I'm just still amazed by the difference, the night and day difference between Santi Aldama from a couple months ago in Utah to what we're seeing now. Like, I feel like Santi Aldama could actually possibly be a starter on a good team. Like, I know he's going to go to the bench when Jaren Jackson Jr. comes back, and I think that's going to be really good for this team because he's getting these reps now, and that's just going to make him better and better. But I feel like he's at a point right now with the defensive rebounding, because that's not what I expected. I expected to be all right on the offensive end. I think he could start for a good team right now. I mean, that's how impressive he's been, man. And again, man, we're only 5 games into the season, and I still think there could be growing pains at times. But I think if you're a Grizzlies fan, man, you have to be excited about what's going on, because they're doing this, man. You don't have your defensive anchor, Jaren Jackson Jr. We talked all summer about Zaire Williams and you losing Kyle and De'Anthony Melton. And you're saying, okay, what they're looking at in order to make up for Zaire, or make up for losing those guys, is Zaire taking that step. You haven't even had Zaire. And you're sitting here at 4-1. I mean, what is this team going to look like when they're fully healthy? If they're this good now, and you're talking about this easy part of the schedule, and we thought that they might drop some games here and there, and they're not doing that. So if they're winning these games now, that's just going to set them up, man. They're going to be on a roll, man, once they get everybody back together, because this is when I thought they would kind of struggle trying to put some things together, and that hasn't happened at all. And you looking at this road trip now, you get that win last night. Like, we said they're going to spit in Utah, but Utah's a team that you're supposed to be better than. You catch them on a back-to-back tomorrow night as they're playing in Denver tonight. So if you're going to split the games, you think tomorrow night is probably the easier one. The second one will be the tougher one. But I'm not going to put it past this team to go over there and get both. And you're going to get a Portland team who's sitting at the top of the West right now, but nine times out of ten, Damian Lillard's not going to play in that game. So that's another game you should win, and then you follow that games 9 and 10 of this 10-game stretch at home. Those are two games you're going to be favored in. They could possibly sweep this thing, like the rest of the games in that 10-game set. So, and that's something that I didn't see coming in. Like I said, 6-4, and I thought people were crazy when they were saying 10-0, 9-1, 8-2, but there's a real possibility that they could go 9-1, 8-2, and that's no question about it right now the way I'm looking at it, because it's things change quickly, man, and this team just hasn't missed a beat, man, and I don't know how they're doing it, but again, man, it goes back to that Grizz culture, man. It's just crazy.
I want to clarify something, and then I'll let you go. This will be super quick, Candace, sorry. Like, when we say, and I think that I can say this safely for Isaac as well, when we say if he does what he done last night and, like, we're okay with it, we're not expecting him to shoot 80% from the field and 75% from three. You want him to be efficient. You want him to knock down shots, you know, like 50% from the field, 40% from three, and be a good plus, you know, like not a loss on the defensive end.
Yeah.
I don't think that he is ever going to be – I think that he is going to be at worst a neutral – on the defensive end, just because of his hand speed. His hand speed is going to surprise people. And I've got to be honest with you, in that aspect of his game, he reminds me a lot of Kyle Anderson. Kyle Anderson is not a guy that you think is going to be that quick with his hands, but Kyle Anderson was very, very good at knocking the ball away. And he had multiple six steal games for this team because he was really good with his hands. Laravia has that same skill set.
Yeah.
High IQ as well. Just like Kyle, man, you can already see it. Roddy as well. Roddy struggled from the field, but he's a former quarterback. Like, he sees the game. I can see some things in him. I still believe in Roddy a lot. Like, I think his basketball IQ is there. I think I like his trajectory as a playmaker. And I kind of use Draymond Green as an example. Not that his game is like Draymond Green, but I feel like he's one of those guys that came in the league. You're not expecting him to have that type of impact, but I think he could be one of those guys that can be on a winning team and have a huge impact, kind of like Draymond Green, do different things for you. Good passer, can knock down a three when you need him to. He has good size, good defender. I just think he's going to be all right. Like, it might take some time with him, but I'm not giving up. I know some people are already writing him off already, and I still think he's going to be a good player for this team down the line.
Yeah. Yeah, what I was going to say, I wanted to push back on a point with Laravia in the sense of they don't really need that rebounding from him. I actually think they do. This bench unit has been getting out rebounded. It's been a part of the reason why they've been in the negative, just because without Steven Adams on the floor, they seem to struggle being able to get rebounds, be able to match their opponent. I think if Laravia, I'm not expecting him to get you nine, but if he can be a regular rebounder, that would be huge, because Brandon Clark hasn't really been able to provide that in his minutes at this point. He still only gave you, three rebounds, looks like.
Yeah, he hadn't really been rebounding.
So he's not really going to be able to provide that. If Laravia can do that, that is huge. I mean, it really is. And Roddy was able to get you three as well. So I think that aspect is needed. It's a big part of, like we talked about, like Kyle, he provided that, and that helped this bench unit a lot. This is the first game that the bench unit was actually everybody had a plus minus. They were very well against the Kings bench, and the Kings bench is still working through things, rotation, stuff like that. So that's part of it. But also, I enjoyed the lineups that Taylor Jenkins did. I want to talk a little bit about the fact that he decided to go with a 9-man rotation, which means that Xavier Tillman did not play. My guess is that he got as sick of the BC Xavier Tillman lineups as I personally did. And so he opted not to play Tillman. And I think the bench benefited from it. I'm not sure if you threw him in there that it wouldn't have messed up the flow of what they had going. So it was good to see. I know Conchar was injured. So part of that was by force. I'm not sure he would have just played. He probably would go 10-man rotation. But the fact that he didn't stick Xavier in there when he easily could have, I think is of note as well.
I think you see a little riding the hot hand, right? You know, Laravia played close to 30 minutes, and I haven't pulled up all the rest of the box scores, but I would say that this is the most minutes that he's played in one game so far. It is. It's because of the level that he was playing.
No question about that.
And, man, like the exit interview, did you guys stick around to watch the exit interview with him?
Yeah, that was awesome, man.
I love it. It's so great to watch these guys have so much fun out here doing it.
Yeah.
I know that this is a Grizzly show, and we're talking about the Kings and the Grizzlies, and we'll get right back to that. But right as we were getting ready to go on the air, there's a notification that pops up. The San Antonio Spurs have waived Josh Primo. Primo was the number 12 overall pick in last year's draft, and that's just – on the surface, it looks like insanity. And, you know, we're not into a ton of speculation here because we don't know. But you got to think that there was some sort of, we're going to get a story here in the next few days as to what led up to this. Because everything that you heard going into this season was how they're excited for his development. And then out of what seems like nowhere, you cut a guy that was your 12th overall pick, and he's 19 years old. It was not a lack of skill thing. Is this shocking to you guys as well? Or is this just something, again, I know it's a Grizzlies podcast, but we like basketball. You know, Isaac and I, when we're diving into, you know, the draft coverage, you guys got to know that we love basketball in general. But I'm just shocked at this. I don't even know what else to say about it.
Yeah, there's definitely has to be another shooter drop. I remember doing draft coverage last year, and he was one of my favorite prospects in this draft. But there was one time, maybe 3 weeks for the draft, he was thought to be a early second round, late first round pick. And as the draft got near and he started working out, man, teams fell in love with him. So it's like you said, I think he was the youngest player in the draft, I want to say. Super athletic, long, like you said, young, just – so much potential, and you take him 12. Like, even that, I don't think he was expected to go that high. People were kind of surprised when they took him in a lottery. Like, I think it was the thought that he could go mid first, maybe early 20s, and they took him at 12, which means they really fell in love with him. And you don't fall out of love with a guy that quickly. I mean, they just picked up his option a couple of weeks ago for a third year. So, yeah, I mean, I got a feeling that there has to be something else going on. If you look to the wording of kind of how they worded it, I think it even kind of foreshadows that there's something going on, because it's like they're saying good luck with whatever you're dealing with. That's kind of what the wording, kind of what it said to me. If you read the tea leaves, like there's something that he's dealing with. So, yeah, I mean, it's a big shock. But if we're crazy and there is nothing going on, and for some reason they just waved him, he's not going to be on the street long at all. Somebody's going to scoop him up, because I mean, he's super young and just, I feel like a mold of clay. Like, you can just mold him. I mean, he just has all the tools, athleticism, just has to put it together. I mean, he's just super young and a lot of potential. So if there's not anything going on, I think he'll be a big future pickup for some team.
Yeah, I would second everything you said. I 100% expect there to be more released about the story, because he's too good of a prospect. He's too young. They invested too much in him, and he's too cheap. I mean, it's not like there's a cost thing that comes along with it, especially with a team that's looking to rebuild and they're looking for young talent. I mean, it has to be something that comes to it. For them to cut him, which means they waive him, that means they feel free that other people can pick him up. And I mean, they wouldn't do that unless they didn't think other people – there was a reason why other people wouldn't, or other teams wouldn't. So I'm just kind of waiting for the tea leaves to trickle down to find out more about this story. It seems like it's way too much unknown, really, for me to be able to talk more about it more than that.
Yeah, yeah, really. It's a 19-year-old, you know. It's – yeah. There's nothing at that age. I can't think that there's any injury that would have happened that would be like career ending.
Yeah.
And that's so, I don't know. We won't stick on that. I know, Candace, you had something that you were getting ready to chime in with. So I'll roll it back to you. We'll go back to the Grizzlies Kings game here. Sorry to go off the rails, but that's just, it's, mind blowing to see a 19-year-old former lottery pick just get cut out of nowhere in year two.
Yeah. I think I lost my thought on. I think it was going to be something about LaRavia. I think I lost my thought on that one. So,
okay.
Well, I was going to say I want to talk about something that I've noticed with the rotations that we've seen here. It's only been five games, but we've seen a lot of John Morant off the ball, and I like that look because it takes pressure off him. You've seen him more in lineups. We've seen it some with Tyus Jones, but I think we've seen it a lot here. There's been times where he's been on the floor with Conchar, and he'll kind of go off the ball, let Conchar bring the ball up. Even Desmond Bain, at times when they're in the game together, Desmond will bring the ball up and he'll go off the ball. And I think that allows him to be fresher. And because you won't, anytime any guy high usage is John Morant, if you can get him any kind of rest or anything like that, it's not really rest because you're still on the floor, but having him off the ball, I think that allows him to conserve engine. I like the look. I think it's worked out really well here early. And the last night at the end of the game, it looked like he was limping. I wasn't aware. There were people that said that he was dealing with flu-like symptoms last night, and I knew something was wrong early in the game. It wasn't bad enough to stop him from being effective, but you could just tell that there was something going on. Like, he wasn't quite as explosive, and I think I said it on Twitter. I was like, with Ja Morant at this point at 50, 60, 70, 80% is still an all-star level player. You look at his stat line, he still had a really good game, but you could tell that there was something going on. Heard that he had like a blanket on the bench, and a fan asked him, and they say he told them that he had the flu. Like, I didn't even notice that during the game, but somebody was talking about a blanket that he had on the bench.
I didn't see the blanket.
I missed that.
Yeah, I didn't understand the blanket at the time, and I saw, I can't remember who was next to him. I want to say it was Dylan or Stephen Adams checking in with him at the same time, and he sort of like rubbed him and kind of encouraged him. I thought it was a little weird, but I didn't think much about it. I know sometimes like you need to stay warm. So I was just like, well, maybe he's just keeping his body warm. But yeah, I definitely noticed it.
No, they keep the forum cold. Like, I'm typically hot natured, but when I go into the forum, I love wearing long sleeves in there, because when I go in there wearing a short sleeve shirt, I feel like I get cold. And so I'm like, yeah, I see a blanket, I'm like, heck, I don't blame you. You're in a freaking... You're wearing shorts and a tank top, bro. Yeah, it's going to be cold for you. So, we're getting a flu game year four in the regular season at Sacramento. And that's, I saw some people like dismissing the Sacramento team because it is the Kings, but this is not the same Sacramento team.
No, they're not.
This is a team that's trying to figure it out. They're 0-4 right now, which looks really bad. But you've got a lot of new pieces playing together here. Kevin Herter's new in this rotation. Keegan Murray, Domantas Sabonis, De'Aaron Fox, Harrison Barnes. These guys have not played together that much. And so trying to figure all of that out is going to take some time for them. But I think the Grizzlies see them again later in the season, and I think this game looks a little bit different whenever we get later in the season, because there was some stuff that you were seeing the Kings do that I think that they clean up. I still feel like the Grizzlies are the better team and that they win, they beat them anyway, but I don't think that this is a team that you can dismiss moving forward.
No, and they had Carter's road to start the season. I mean, they really didn't have much of a chance. I mean, their first game was against Dame, and Dame came out hot. I mean, I know everybody thought Portland was going to be not much or nothing, but Damian Lillard, man, those guys are kicking. So that's a tough game. Then they had the Clippers, the Warriors, and then the Grizz. I mean, that's a tough ask for any team, especially a team that's, like you said, still got a new coach, still trying to put things together. So no, I think pretty highly of this team. I think they got a lot more talent than they've had in the past, and I think they got a better chance of putting it all together than they have in a long time.
Yeah, man, I said it coming in. Like, people were looking at 0-3, and they were thinking this was going to be a pushover game. I felt like the Grizz were going to win, but it kind of started off exactly like I thought it would. A team desperate, been off for 3 days, lost their first two home games, coming home back after the road game, trying to win a game. And they came out with a lot of energy. And in the beginning, you was like, uh-oh, okay, this is going to be a back-and-forth game. And the Grizzlies, even though it did go back and forth at times, I think that in that third quarter, Malik Monk got hot there for a minute and kind of got them back in the game, and they kind of went back and forth. But the Grizzlies pretty much control this game. I think they won every quarter. I don't think Sacramento outscored the Grizzlies in any quarter. So the Grizzlies had control of the game, but they just showed they were the better team. That there were times, I think, last year, or especially 2 years ago, where Grizzlies probably would have lost a game like this. When teams come out hot and you're going back and forth, like you see them lose these games, but now the Grizzlies have just taken it to another level and they've just put their foot on the gas and kind of big board him, I want to say. And showed you, nah, man, this ain't happening tonight, man. Y'all about to be 0-4. And that's just kind of what you saw. They just kind of took over the game, especially there in their fourth quarter. They went on that run. Desmond Bane just – Malik Monk did his best, man, but it was just too much Desmond Bane at third quarter, and they kind of carried their momentum over into the fourth, and, man, they kind of ended up winning it going away. But this Sacramento team has a lot of talent. They're not 0-4 bad. There's no doubt about that. They're going to get it figured out. Mike Brown, coach there, man, he's focusing in on defense. And you just talk about some of the pieces they have. Keegan Murray, I'm a big fan of his, man. He was one of my favorite prospects in this draft. I think he's going to be really good. Always been a Sabonis fan. I like what he brings. He tried his best last night, man. Felt like he was kind of out there by himself at times. But Davion Mitchell is another guy they added that can score. We know what De'Aaron Fox is capable of. So they got talent. This is not going to be a team that's going to be at the bottom of the West. Like, I think they'll be somewhere. I don't know if they'll make it to the play-in, but I think they'll be right there below there. I just believe they have too much talent. This team, they're sitting at 0-4, man, but they're going to turn around.
And what I was impressed with, I'll say a welcome change. It was a welcome change to see them hold this. Like you said, they got offensive firepower, the Kings team, and to hold them to 110. That's the lowest score that the Grizzlies have allowed. Yeah. They got the Knicks. The closest one was the Knicks game that was 112. And so it was just good to see them not let somebody score 120 plus points on them. I think it was twofold. I want to say it was because of the defense. And the defensive effort, especially in the second half, was a lot more intensified. So I think that's part of it. And then, like I said, they weren't able to really hit their threes. Part of it was just that. But either way, there needs to be a little bit more focus on defense. And I think there has been. And I said going into this road trip, I was like, you know, if they're going to come out with one of these wins, they're going to get some stops at the end of the day. And that seems to be just what they did.
Yeah, exactly. That's – I think that if this team finds a solid defense before Jaren Jackson gets back, like if this defense becomes a middle-of-the-pack defense before Jaren comes back –
yeah,
that it's going to be one of the best in the NBA when he gets back, because you're seeing Aldama do stuff that I definitely didn't expect him to do. It. There may have been some guys outside of me that thought that he was going to be this type of defender. And it's not that he's being, you know, this elite lockdown defender, but what he had, you know, the games that he had played in the past, what we had on tape for him, it looked like he was not going to be much more than a traffic cone out there, and he's making a lot of the right plays. So, you know, it's not just him. It's a team defense. And this, you know, Taylor Jenkins has preached that team defense. So these guys learning their assignments, the adjustments from LaRavia last night to stop ball watching and chasing the ball, allow them to be better on the defensive end. And that is something I think the offense is going to be there for this team. You look at John Morant, Desmond Bane, both being able to go out and essentially get you a bucket whenever you need it. And then you add some shooters around them. The offense is going to be there. If this defense is clicking, this team is going to be very formidable, regardless of who they're matching up against.
Yeah, man, 259 points in the last two games. Like, I didn't think, and like you said, they've been giving up a lot of points, but I think they've been better defensively than I expected already. And I know that's like people's like, oh, well, they've been terrible on defense. I think they've been better. I thought they were just going to be awful without Jaren, because we've seen how they look defensively times without Jaren. And I feel like they're getting enough defense, and they're definitely getting enough offense, especially these last two games, to where it hasn't really mattered. I mean, you scored 259 points in two games. Put up that many points, man, you're going to win a lot of games. So I definitely think the offense is going to be fine. I'm not concerned about that at all. And the fact that they're getting by now, still able to win games with the level of defense they're playing now, when you get Jared back, they'll be right back to be an elite defensive team. I don't think there's any question about it. And we kind of talk about Aldama being a kind of a Kyle Anderson replacement. You look at this line last night. If this is not a vintage Kyle Anderson line, he didn't do a lot of offense, but you look at this line, 4 points, two rebounds, an assist, two steals, two blocks, even over 4 from 3. That's looking like Kyle out there. So that's a Kyle Anderson line. But, yeah, man, Aldama has just been a revelation. I know he didn't have a big offensive game last night, but did have that reverse dunk that was nice. But he was still doing things. Yeah, he was still out there doing things, other things outside of scoring that helped his team win that game last night.
Yeah, speaking of scoring, I'm going to continue to monitor this half court thing just because of how much it was an issue last season. And they have, you know, I mentioned in the last episode they were number 5. They are number 2 now in half court offense.
Yeah, only
120.7 points per possession, and that's like a point difference between them and Dallas. Mm-hmm. So they're basically
that's crazy, man, to think about
offenses in the league right now. Yeah, especially when you think about how Luka, we always talk about that play half court. That's why I think it's going to be different this year against the Luka thing. It's just another thing that goes into it. This team is going to be that much better at half court offense, basically to be able to compete with Dallas or maybe even be better than Dallas at half court. I think it's going to change. I just think it's been circumstance. But anyway, that's a separate subject. I guess we'll talk about that in March when they play again. But it's exciting to see.
Yeah, only 12 fast break points last night.
Like Ja Morant shooting the crap out of the ball from 3 right now. You know, he was 1 for 3 in this game, but even with this 1 for 3, he's still shooting, I think, around 50% from 3 so far, and that's not sustainable. He's not going to do that for the season.
Yeah, that'd be 13. He'd be 13 of 23. So yeah, still shooting about upwards of 50%. No, he's not going to do that. But I really do think, as we talked about on the last show, that he could be at 37, 38, maybe even 39% of the season. If he can get to 39, man, that's just ridiculous. He's going to be unguardable. You can tell that he's conscious of getting to the mid range. He hadn't always knocked it down, but he's taking that shot more. And we know when he decides something is a deficiency, he works on it and gets better at it. So the fact that he's actually taking that shot now lets me know that he's working in the dark, so to speak, as he always says, on that mid range. And I think the defensive effort, even going back to the preseason, you could tell a more concerted effort on the defensive end from him. So, I mean, he's just turning into a complete player. I mean, we already know all the elite other things that he could do. I mean, if he shore up those aspects, I mean, he could be the best player in the league. I think, I don't know if it was NBA.com put out their MVP ladder today, and he was number 1. I think somebody else had him. He was number 2. They had Giannis number 1, but I think it was NBA.com's MVP ladder today that I saw, and it had Ja Morant number 1 on.
Yep. And one more thing I wanted to talk about. We talked about a lot of the changes. I kind of wanted to bring this up. We were talking about just the growth of each player. I don't mean to do this to bash, but and I know Dylan Brooks to get his feet under him, but he was a -7 tonight. He struggled defensively. Fox just blew by him sometimes. Like, he couldn't hold him. He's still getting his feet in conditioning. But one thing that I want to continue to watch for in terms of, is this team going to bring Dylan back, or is he going to be moved in the trade deadline like we've talked about, is, you know, even for some of the veterans that have come into this team, like a Tyus Jones, like even a Kyle Anderson, we saw improvements from him. He kind of regressed because of injury with his shoulder. But De'Anthony Melton, I mean, just these veterans that have come into the system have been able to show development, show growth in some way. And Dylan is probably the only player that I can think of that's been a part of this regime that just hasn't seen any real – I mean, his passing, I think, might be better. We'll see. It's trying to be better. But he's the real player that is what he is. And I know that I mentioned the other examples because people say, well, he's a veteran. Well, so are these other guys. Steven Adams is definitely a veteran. He's being more aggressive offensively. We're still seeing some growth from him even at this age. So I just wonder if it's like kind of one of these things or not like the other type of thing. And it's still something to monitor. I don't want to talk on it too much because, like I said, I know part of it is Dylan getting his feet from under him. So I'm not holding his feet to the fire. But it's just a trend I noticed as we were talking about each one of these guys and how they've grown in some way. You can't say that about Dylan.
Man, if you say this age again, the way you said it about Steven Adams, we're going to fight because he's only 29.
Yeah, he's only 29. That's crazy.
That's how young this team is. You know how long he's been playing in this league, though. He's been, I mean,
I get what you're saying for sure. I would say that Dylan's passing, it's definitely improved. The issue is him choosing the pass. His decision-making has not improved. And I think that that is something that's going to – I think that's what is leading to his demise here in Memphis. That's what's going to lead Dylan Brooks out of Memphis, whether that is at the trade deadline or in a very unlikely scenario walking as a free agent at the end of the year. Do you – that actually leads me to a question. And, Isaac, you can kind of – I know that you were going to say something on Brooks there, but – what do you think happens or what do you think the series of events would be that would lead up to Dylan Brooks remaining on this team for the remainder of this season and then just walking as a free agent next year?
Yeah. My point that I was going to make with DB is I think I can see it on his face. I think he's very aware of the situation. I think he's aware that things are changing. And I think he's super aware that he's struggling. I think he's kind of struck, and it's crazy because how much he's meant to this team, how much he's meant to this culture. I think he's kind of struggling to find his place and what he should be doing with how this team is now operating. I think he's really struggling with that, and I think he's in his head. Like, he doesn't seem to be, like, the same. The demeanor isn't the same. Like the confidence, you can tell that it's not there. Like, he still shoots the basketball too much. Like you said, takes some bad shots. But the look, you can just tell the confidence that he used to have. The swagger isn't quite there. I mean, you saw him going back and forth with KD and some things there. But just knowing Dylan and watching him, you can just tell that something is off with him. And like I said, man, I've been saying for once they drafted Zaire and definitely later in the season last year that I felt like either they would move him this past summer or at the trade deadline. The Zaire thing kind of throws a wrench in it because I feel like they wanted to see Zaire take that next step, and that would make it easier for him. But to your question, he just has to be more efficient. I just find it hard to see him here after this year. I just feel like they're not going to want to pay him, even if he gets better at some of the things that we see that needs to be worked on. I still don't know if he's here. I just feel like he might be the odd man out, and they feel like they can utilize that money in a different way. I just don't know if he's going to be the guy, because I think ideally he's the guy that comes off the bench. I really do think that would be his best role if he could play the type of game that he needs to play. And I just don't think he's not going to accept that. I just don't see him being a guy that's going to be happy coming out of the bench, especially here in a place where he feels like he helped build this and he's the big part of this. And you got other guys coming in. Like you said, you got LaRavia playing 30 minutes last night. You're going to have Zaire coming in, and they're definitely going to push him and push his development. I just don't think he's going to be happy in that role. And I think that's one of the things that I think, because we even talked about this last time, could we see Dylan Brooks come out the bench when Zaire comes back. And I think ideally if this front office and his coaches there, probably things were in a perfect world, I think that's probably how they would do it, because I think they're really going to push Zaire's development. And I just don't think he's going to be happy with that. And I honestly really don't see him here past the trade deadline. Like I really think he's going to be moved either way. I just don't see things coming together the way they would need to for them to pay the amount of money that he's probably going to garner.
I think it would be a couple of scenarios here to answer your question. I think it would probably take them being the number one seed in the West for it to make.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah,
like, they were the number one seed, which is even better than the two seed. Then you kind of get to that situation with Kyle Anderson, because I believe they were probably looking to move him, but they didn't want to mess with that chemistry. And they basically said, they didn't say they were looking to move Kyle, but they did say that they didn't want to mess with the chemistry. And I think that's sort of the logic behind why they were saying that. You could see a similar situation with that happen. If Dylan doesn't improve performance-wise much, like if he still stays inefficient in you know, if we don't see the Dylan defensively that we've seen in the past, because Dylan, you know, has not been as sharp as he's been known to be defensively, not just right now with him getting his legs under them, but, you know, even last season, there were some lapses there. If that's the case, maybe they try to do a Steven Adams sort of deal where, you know, it's the end of the offseason. Well, they extended Adams before, but where you try to get him on an affordable deal because he's having a down year. Maybe Dylan will accept that. I don't know if he would or not. But you get Dylan on a couple-year deal and then try to trade him next season is the only thing I can see. I don't really know if they're going to let him walk. I think it's actually more likely that they re-sign him on a cheap deal than just let him walk altogether. But those are the only two scenarios I can really see. I think it's more likely that he is moved at the trade deadline, but it would take something like a number one seed in the West for, you know, maybe if that happens, they give pause to it, they let the season play out and then try to re-sign him on a cheap deal. Because if Dylan has a bad, you know, well, if he continues, if he doesn't get much better from what he is right now, there's not a ton of growth from what he's producing right now at the end of the season, maybe the market isn't as strong. I mean, you know, he's a two-way wing and that's valuable, but not if the defense dropped off and the offense dropped off. It does tank his value to some extent. I even saw a video on YouTube talking about players who weren't the same. It was like Russell Westbrook and Anthony Davis, and they brought up Dylan Brooks, which I was really surprised that they did that in that video. So, I mean, people in the league are noticing that his efficiency has dropped off and his defense isn't what it used to be, and maybe that plays a role. I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't go as far to say his defense isn't what it used to be. De'Aaron Fox is one of the quicker guys in the league. I don't think when Dylan Brooks has his legs underneath him that De'Aaron Fox is a good matchup for him. I think that he can guard a lot of ones in the league, but guys that are quick like Fox, he's not going to be able to stay in front of them. As good of a defender that he is, he just does not have the speed. And I don't think that's a tick on him. I think that, you know, 26 minutes a game is not what you're going to see from Dylan. I think that you see him closer to that 30-minute mark whenever he's fully healthy.
Yeah, people look at that game against KD. KD scored 20-something of those points when Dylan wasn't on it. So I don't necessarily think his defense is dropped off either. I think you'll see that as time goes on, but it just feels different. And not that the front office listens to what the fans are saying or cares what the fans are saying, but I think there was one time where just he was so ingrained in his team, like I just couldn't see them moving him. I don't feel like that anymore, especially if it continues to go like it goes now, because he feels like an odd man out. Like, and that's weird to say because he's been such a part of this. He's actually the longest tenured member of this team, but it just looks weird right now. Like, and I don't know, man. I hate it because I love DB. I like the attitude that he's brought to this team. We know how much John and those guys like him. It just feels like, man, this is heading toward a departure. And I've kind of felt like that, like I said, going back to last season once they drafted Zaire, and I feel like that even more so now. I think he would, in order for it to even be a question, I think, like Candace said, maybe if they're the number one seed, they're just rolling. And you said, okay, well, we don't want to touch this at all, man. This is it, man. We feel like we're on our way to the championship this year. Or he would have to do a complete 180. And yeah, even then, I still think there's a chance that they could move him. But it would have to turn all the way around on the offensive end, I think. And I really do feel like they would prefer to start Zaire when he came back. I really do feel like that, because I feel like they know for sure that he's going to be here long term, and they want to get the max out of him and get his development going. And I don't think that would be a kind of a tedious situation, because I also don't think they really want to ask Dylan to come off the bench because of what he's meant to this team, how long he's been here. So it's just a weird situation with him. And I hope it turns around, man, and he could end up staying here. Maybe, like we talked about, maybe a Tyus deal, maybe a 2-year deal. Maybe he does have a down year and they feel like they can get him for a little bit cheaper. Maybe it happens that way. I don't know, man. But if I had to bet, like I said, I think he ends up getting moved at the deadline if you had to ask me right now.
Hyman has said on multiple occasions, I'm not going to make a trade just to make a trade. And so I think that there are probably more scenarios than what we're speaking on right here that end up with Dylan Brooks on this team for the remainder of this season, and he walks. And that is, I know that that seems like maybe that's a bad decision because, you know, you can move him and get something of value. But
especially this year, because like, I think there's going to be a lot of taking teams, like more than usual teams, I mean, really trying to sell off at the deadline.
There definitely is. You know, like this injury for Dame Lillard, it's a calf strain, so he's not likely to be out for an extended period. But if he doesn't stay healthy, does Portland just finally fold and go into a full rebuild? And then you're looking at guys like, okay, Jeremy Grant is a guy that you can go out with that contract and get a Jeremy Grant. Does Jeremy Grant push you over the top? I don't know whether he does or does not. And I'm not saying that I want them to target him, but you never know. I remember we were in when we were doing the Twitter, like, and I feel like an idiot. I can't think of what those freaking things are called.
Spaces.
Yeah, when we were in the Twitter spaces. Sorry, dude. Like, my brain is not working today. I apologize. But we were in that Twitter space, and somebody was asking you, like, who are they going to trade for? Well, we can't
answer that question.
Yeah, you don't like know, that. Like, are the Clippers going to stay healthy? If they're not healthy, is there a guy on that team that is available that you can go out and combine contracts and get? Is there somebody out there? And so I really do believe that we could see a scenario where Dylan Brooks does not get traded at the trade deadline and remains on this team, because if they can't get somebody who they feel like is going to give them a better shot to win the title, I don't think that they're going to make that move. I think that that is going to be, that's the lens that they're looking at the future. And if you're going out to get a guy, it might just be a 1-year rental, and who's going to be available? Is there going to be a player available that's better than Dylan that can put you closer to that championship? And we don't know that answer right now. A lot of that is going to depend on what other teams are doing, where they're at, whenever it gets to that trade deadline.
Yeah. I hate when people ask that question, because like you said, I mean, most trades that happen, it's stuff that just comes out of nowhere. Like, you've never even, there's no rumors. Like, they're big time trades where you're talking about like superstar players that get moved that have been talked about, but most mid-tier to lower-tier trades, it's stuff that comes out of nowhere. Nobody's even speculated it. Like, just different things, the Justice Winslow deal or things. I mean, you just never did. That's not anybody. People like, oh, well, they need to go get Justice Winslow. I mean, there's just deals that happen all the time, so you can't really predict that because you don't know what the landscape is going to look like in February. Like you said, could Portland be a team that's now tanking? Like you said, a team could have a major injury or a couple of injuries and decide to go a different direction. You just never know what's going to be going on and what's out there. So when people always act like, well, you want to make a trade, who they going to trade for? Like, I can't answer that question, man. It could be anybody. You just never know what's going on.
You never know who's going to come available. And if last year the Sacramento Kings trading Tyrese Halliburton didn't show you that.
Yeah, like who saw that coming?
Yeah, nothing will ever show you that. And so, you know, there's a lot of time between now and the trade deadline. There's no telling what this team is going to look like, what the standings in the West are going to look like. So who knows? And that is the Lakers, as projected, are going to be terrible again this year. I don't know what move that they can make that's going to make that team better. Because at this point, if I'm the Pacers and you call me and you want Buddy Hield and Miles Turner, you're giving me both of those first, or you're kicking rocks.
Got to have over the first, 100%.
You're giving me both of those first, or you're kicking rocks. And so at some point, you have to make a decision. Are you going to go all in? Are you going to completely mortgage the future of the franchise? You're already buried for a long time. And so it's a lot of basketball. I'm not going to keep going down there. A lot of basketball between now and the trade deadline. I'm excited to watch this Grizzlies team and what they're doing. I did not expect them to be this good this early in the season, missing Jaren. The rookies are playing above what I expected so far. Even Roddy.
3-7.
Yeah, it's fine. I said in the same freaking thing, I'm like, I'm fine being wrong. I would much prefer your outcome to mine, but this is what I thought. And I spoke on reasons why I said that. So that's fine. I'll eat the crow. They're already better than what I thought they can be. But, you know, if they end this, the rest of this 10 games, 4-6, I'm going to come back and bring this show up and let all of Grizz Nation blame it on Candace for talking crap because they're 4-1.
Yeah, you're going to air it out, bro.
That's right.
No, no,
keeping
but yeah,
receipts.
But
you are recorded, man.
Yeah, but I'm not mad. I wasn't mad at him at all for 3-7 because I understand. Like, there were reasons to have major questions, especially here early in the season. And people were jumping on me for saying 6-4, like saying that was ridiculous to even think that they could be 6-4. And all this stuff I laid out on top of the show. Like, you're not supposed to be 4-1 through that. Like, you're just not. Like, and I said this earlier season. I was like, I have these questions, and everything could come up aces. And they could win game. And that's exactly what's happened. Everything that could go right with some of these questions has gone right so far. Like, it's 5 games. I've had people victory lapping on me already, like, early here through 5 games. And I'm like, man, things, there could still be some growing pains. I know you're looking at the situation now, you're thinking if they're able to win games now, like, when you get everybody back, it's going to be even better. But throughout the season, there are ebbs and flows. Like I said this team was going to be a top 4 seed. I said there's going to be number 4. And, I mean, who knows what's going to happen throughout the season. But through 5 games, man, you got to be happy. But like I said, I said 6-4, and I understood why David said 3-7, because it's just, there were a lot of questions, and missing Jaren is huge, man. You go back to look at the analytics last year, on the floor, off the floor, man, just night and day, and you're working some new guys in. You don't have those two veteran guys to kind of fill in, and when you thought you're missing Dylan, you're missing Zaire, and you didn't have those veterans, you knew the rookies would have to come in and play minutes. It's just been a revelation. I think one reason they've still been able to do it is Ja just is pretty much been the best player in the NBA, and Bane over these last 2 games is just taking his game up 2 notches. And I think when you have those 2 guys doing what they're doing the last 2 games, it almost negates what anybody else is doing. You can still win games when you got those 2 guys going big like that.
Yeah, for the record, I was 7-3. We'll see what happens. I might.
Yeah, I'm thinking 8-2, 9-1 now.
They were.
No, there. Am I?
He says I'm about 9-1.
Yeah, I said I'm thinking 8-2, 9-1 now. I said 6-4, but unless something just completely goes off the rail, they're going better than 6-4. Like I don't really see, when I look at this, the remaining games of this 10-game set, the only one that I really look at as a loss that could be a loss is one of those games in Utah. I think that second game in Utah on Monday is going to be a tough one, because, like you said, you catch them on a back-to-back tomorrow night. They're playing in Denver tonight. That's altitude. I know they're at altitude too, so they're a little bit more used to that. But it's still, even if you're there, I mean, playing, and it still can cause some problems. So they're probably going to have some tired legs tomorrow night. So I think the one tomorrow night is the easiest one. I think the one on Monday be the toughest. But if they get past those two, if they win both of those games in Utah, I think they're sweeping it. And I think they're going to be 9-1, which is insanity to me.
Yep, agreed. We appreciate you guys tuning in. We'll go ahead and wrap it up. Next game Friday night in Utah, game 1 of 2 there. You can get the show on Twitter at Ethos Grizzlies. I am at NBA D-Will 21. Candace, if you got anything else you want to throw in before we get out of here, go ahead, and then Isaac will get us home.
Yep. No, we'll just look forward to seeing this Jazz series. I think it'll be very interesting. This Jazz team seems to take on a lot of the identity of the things that the Grizz used to do for sure last year. They are good steals. They are good at fast break transition points, and that's sort of how they've been living. So I'm curious to see how this is going to match up and the stylistic differences between the two now that the Grizz have sort of evolved a little bit. So anyway, in the meantime, look forward to that. We'll be here with the post game breakdown. You can find me on Twitter at CandaceH901. Isaac, take us out.
Yeah, man, one thing I did want to mention, I was looking at the schedule and happened to catch this. Man, Portland, they play tonight, and they don't play anymore until Wednesday. That's their next game. So they're going to have 4 days off coming into that game. And the Grizzlies will have played 2 more games by the time they play that in Portland. That's a weird schedule quirk. I don't know why they're getting 4 days off at home in between 2 games, but thought that was kind of weird. But, yeah, man, we'll be back with a post game, man. Grizzlies with 2 games in Utah. As always, tough, especially on the road to sweep a team. I think tomorrow night will be the easier one since they're on the back-to-back, but you just never know how these things are going to go in association. If they split, they can lose tomorrow and win a game on Monday, and you just never know how that's going to happen. But you can find me on Twitter at Isaac_NBA. That's ISAAC_NBA. Go over to at Ethos Grizzlies. Give us a like and a follow. We definitely appreciate that. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. For David, Ken, I've been Isaac. Next time, we're gone.
And that will conclude our Sports Ethos presentation.